sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavirnyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Good. Welcome back. Welcome also to the students attending this class online. We continue here at the very end of the Uddhava Gita. I think there'll just be one more class after this one to finish the text. And at the end of the text, Sri Krishna concluded his teachings to Uddhava at the we saw in the last class, but he's done teaching, but he's not done. Sri Krishna does exactly the same in the Bhagavad Gita. Verse 66, Sarva Dharman Paratyajya, is known as the Charama Shloka, Charama Last, the final teaching of instruction. But then he goes on for 12 more verses after that. And it's very common. Not only is it common, it's actually important to have some final concluding material. And you'll see the importance of it in just a few moments. So let us turn to our text and see. Esha te behita kritsno, esha te behita kritsno, Brahmavarasya sangraha, Brahmavarasya sangraha, samasa vyasa vidhina, samasa vyasa vidhina, devanamapi durgamaha, devanamapi durgamaha. Good. Would you mind turning it off now? Yeah, can. Thank you. So, Sri Krishna continues. Remember, Uddhava was next, we'll save that for next week, talking about Uddhava. But all of this is being taught, of course, to Uddhava. And he says to Uddhava, Sri Krishna says, Eshaha, this, te abhihat, abhihitaha, which has been abhihitaha taught in this case. Taught te unto you. All this which has been taught unto you, it is kritsnaha. It is complete. A complete what? Kritsnaha, drop down a line, sangraha. A complete summary, completely encompassing brahmavadasya. It is a complete summary of brahmavada, the teachings of Brahman here, absolute truth, the highest truth. So what has been taught here is the complete representation, a complete unfoldment. My guru loved that term. Yeah, complete unfoldment of the highest of all truths. Meaning, this isn't just story. Sometimes we get the idea that the Puranas are all just story and story, even Mahabharata, Ramayana, they're all stories, which they are, but in those stories are certain passages or portions which give these profound teachings of the ancient rishis. So it's both. So now look at the typical question. Is the contents of the Bhagavata Purana, is it all just story? It's not just story. It's story with these profound teachings interwoven very wonderfully into the text. So Sri Krishna says here that what has been taught to you, Uddhava, is a complete representation of the teachings of the ancient rishis. Samasa vyasa vidhina, according to doing things both samasa collectively, meaning by topic. So it's been taught samasa vidhi by topic, and also Vyasa Vidhi by verse. Verse by verse, topic by topic by topic. This has all been taught to you, Uddhava, and it is something which is, last word, Durgamaha, difficult to understand, Devanam, even for the gods. So if you have a hard time, even they are having a hard time. The profundity of this subject matter. Not so hard to understand a story. You know, the story of Sri Krishna's birth, for example, comes in this Bhagavata Purana. It's easy to understand a story, but to really wrap your head around these profound teachings of Advaita Vedanta is much more of a challenge. Then, all right. Abhikshnashaste te garitam, abhikshnashaste garitam, jnanam vispashta yuktimata, jnanam vispashta yuktimata, etad vignaya mucheta, etad vignaya mucheta, purusho nashta samshayaha, purusho nashta samshayaha. Te garitam, O Uddhava, te unto you garitam. All this has been taught. Has been taught how abhikshna shaha, abhikshna many times, abhikshna shaha repeatedly. It's been told over and over again. Remember, this text is considerably longer than the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is 18 chapters with 700 verses. This text is 24 chapters with about 1,100 verses. So, arguably, Uddhava has gotten a bigger dose of Vedanta than did Arjuna on the battlefield. And the reason for this, two reasons. One, he said in the prior verse, it's difficult to grasp. And the way it works is, you know, it's tricky. Because when we're talking about knowledge, you either get it or you don't. But it's more involved than that. These teachings are given at different levels. It's like layers. First you get the lowest layer, then you get another layer, then you get another layer, then you get yet another. And the problem is, when the teaching is up at that third or fourth level and you're just beginning, you won't get it. You won't get that higher level until you've got the lower level. So the first time you hear it, you get the lower level. Next time you hear it, next level up. Next time you, which is why I'm pretty sure all of you have had this experience with the Bhagavad Gita and other spiritual texts. Every time you read it or study it or hear it taught, each time you hear something more. And more, and more, and more. It's wonderful. You won't get that from a comic book. You won't get that, how about this? You won't get that from a movie. You know, you watch the movie, you got it. You watch it a second time, you'll pick up some details of what the actors are doing in the scenes and all of this stuff. Some of the technical details of the movie you'll get. But you've already got the plot. Got it the first time. So this is a much more profound subject matter. You generally, unless you're some kind of spiritual prodigy, you won't get it the first time. It will take repeated study. That's one reason for abhikshnataha, again and again and again. There's a second reason, and that is even after you've got it, that's not enough. It's got to go in very deeply. There's a process of assimilation required. Many of you have heard the main practice of Vedanta being described as Shravana, followed by Manana and Nididhyasana. Shravana is what we're doing right now, a study, but it's followed by Manana, a process of removing any doubts or vagueness, and Nididhyasana, a practice of assimilation. So, it takes time, and it takes immersion in these teachings for a period of time, which is why our classes here go on and on and on. If everyone got enlightened the first time they came here, who would be sitting in the audience? There'd be no one here. That's how it works. It takes its own time. Okay, enough said. So, Uddhava, this has been taught to you again and again and again. What has been taught to you? Jnanam, spiritual wisdom. And we're going to talk a little bit later of how spiritual wisdom is not like other kinds of academic learning. It's utterly different. I'll save that discussion for a few minutes. So we have taught you have been taught this jnanam, this spiritual wisdom. You've been taught how it is vispashta, it is very clear, and it is yuktimat, accompanied by reasoning. So that's one of the hallmarks of a really solid teaching. First of all, it should be spashta, clear, and it should be yuktimat, accompanied by reasoning. You've probably had the counterexample. You want a counterexample? Go listen to some of these so-called New Age gurus on YouTube. You hear them, and what they're teaching is loosely based on what we're studying here. But if you listen to 1 hour of a New Age guru teaching this stuff, after 1 hour, if I ask you, what exactly did he say, what will be your response? Well, he said, we have all these speech patterns. The point I'm making is oftentimes these teachings are dumbed down in various contexts. And when they're dumbed down, they are neither vispashta, clear, nor are they yuktimat. You leave all that stuff out to make it easier to convey. So we are fortunate to have access to these traditional teachings taught in a traditional way, which is vispashta, clear, and yuktimat, logical. And then, last line, purushaha, a person. Third line, etat vijnaya, having gained this wisdom. And having gained this wisdom, having gone layer by layer by layer by layer, after much exposure to these teachings, after much self-inquiry, atma-vichara, after all, that's the main practice here, after much prayer, after much meditation, all of these sadhanas, but here, tat-vijnaya, having gained this spiritual wisdom, a person, mucheta, would become completely free from what? Nashta samshayaha, doubts. So repeated exposure to these teachings remove doubts. Remember, shravana, manana, nididhyasana, that middle step, manana, removing doubts. And that's what Sri Krishna refers to here. And then
suviviktam tava prashnam, mayai tadapi dharayet, mayai tadapi dharayet, sanatanam brahma guhyam, sanatanam brahma guhyam, param brahmari gacchati, param brahmari gacchati.
O Uddhava, Tava prashnam, your questions, suvivictam, have been thoroughly discussed, thoroughly answered with vispashtam and yukti, very clearly, very logically. All of this has been done maya, by me. So everything I have, my answers to your teachings have been, your questions have been answered by me very thoroughly, very completely, but there's more. Etadapi dharayet. Whatever I have said, you have to grasp. And here's where we understand the difference between a body of spiritual wisdom and a body of academic teachings. Academic teachings convey information. So a book on geography, lots of geographical information. A book on mathematics, lots of mathematical information. But the Bhagavata Purana, you know, you could say it has information in it, certainly information about how did Sri Krishna get born? What a wonderful and complicated story. We won't talk about that right now. So you can say there is definitely information present in our scriptures, but here we're referring to, we're specifically referring to the teachings of Vedanta. The teachings of Vedanta is not information. When the ancient rishis said, tat tvam asi, you are that, that is not information. When a geography book tells you that the Appalachian Mountains are in the eastern part of the United States, that's information. You can write it down, Appalachian Mountains. When Vedanta says, tat tvam asi, ancient rishis say, tat tvam asi, and you write it down, just like you wrote down Appalachian Mountains, you're wasting your time. Tattvamasi is not something to write down. It's not another tidbit of information, or the word they use, sound bite. These are all sound bites. These are not sound bites. These are instructions to guide your personal process of self inquiry, Atma Vichara. My most recent video, that new deep dive video, goes into this topic very directly. You can watch, go to my YouTube channel, you'll find that video. This is such a common confusion. We come to these teachings, in fact, we're set up for failure. Here's how we're set up for failure. How many years did you go to school? If you add up your elementary education, your middle school education, college, university, postgraduate, and some of you more than that, internships and all of this stuff. If you add up all of those years of classroom education, years in which you collected huge amounts of valuable information, information which empowered you in your chosen profession, you are well trained to gather information. And you come to these teachings with all of that training, with that orientation. And it's natural. Most students of Vedanta make this mistake. And that is, you approach these teachings the same way you approach other materials taught in a classroom. It's more information to be gathered. And that approach is disastrous. And I'm using a strong word very intentionally. It is disastrous because you're missing the boat completely, so to speak. These teachings are not meant to be gathered. These teachings are meant to be used. And the metaphor I've used many times is that of a roadmap. A roadmap has a lot of information on it, but you're supposed to use the roadmap. Another good—I used another example in that video, an example many of you can relate to, the example of a cookbook. You can study, if you study a cookbook, what do you get out of it? Does it fill your tummy? Does it make your food taste better? It only works if you use it. So these are examples of how the teachings of Vedanta are not meant to be collected, but they're meant to be used. And that's why Sri Krishna says, etarapi dharayet, you should grasp. They should be made. Interesting. You grasp a tool. This is a tool. Some of you in our Vedanta classes, you know that we've called Vedanta a collection of prakriyas, teaching methodologies, teaching methods. And these teaching methods are grasped, dharayet, and they are used. They're used by a skillful teacher, and if you are a skillful student, you use them yourself for the sake of atma-vichara, self-inquiry. So this jnanam is not merely to be collected like you collect academic knowledge. This spiritual wisdom is meant dharayet. It's meant to be used for your personal process of self-inquiry. And this knowledge is sanat, is... This knowledge, maya etat, where are we? Vivictum. Now, we have to make the right connection here. So these teachings about what? So Sri Krishna has answered Uddhava with these teachings. These teachings, which are sanatanam, eternal. Eternal in the sense that truth has no beginning. It's just 30 seconds of logic. Keep it that short. When did 2 plus 2 decide to be 4? An eternal truth. That's the idea. These teachings are like 2 plus... They are indisputably true. They are eternally true. And these teachings about what? Param, the ultimate truth, which is Brahma Guhyam, which is Brahman, which is Guhyam. Brahman is that ultimate truth, which is Guhyam, hidden, and we commonly say, hidden within, being covered by the so-called veil of ignorance. There's no veil. There's plenty of ignorance. So that ignorance prevents you from discovering the reality that is already present within you as your true nature. So when that so-called veil is removed, you discover who you already are. You discover Sri Krishna's presence. You are already blessed by Sri Krishna's presence within you. And that's what he says here. Wrong verse. So in this way, Brahma adhigachati, one reaches, adhigachati, one reaches what obtains Brahma, this ultimate truth, the absolute reality. Adhigachati. Again, the root meaning of adhigachati means to go towards something. Would be, if you analyze the etymology of that word, to go towards. To go towards suggests that there's some kind of movement going on, some kind of travel, some kind of journey, like a spiritual journey. That's what this says. That term, atma-vichara, that we used before, that self-inquiry, that process of self-inquiry is the so-called spiritual journey of life. There is something to be discovered, something to be attained through these teachings as taught by Sri Krishna. Then, yahetan mama bhakteshu, yahetan mama bhakteshu, sampradadyat supushkalam, sampradyat supushkalam, tasyaham brahmadayasya, tasyaham brahmadayasya, tadam yatmanam atmana, tadam yatmanam atmana. Yaha, one who etat mama pushkalam. Those words we connect. Etat, this teaching. What kind of teaching? Su pushkalam. Pushkalam means powerful. Supushkalam, really powerful. This really powerful teaching, mama, of mine, this really powerful teaching of mine, yaha sampradadyat, one who gives this teaching, one who imparts this teaching. Sri Krishna now is talking about the guru. The guru, the one who imparts these powerful teachings. These powerful teachings to whom? We can take that mama again. Mama bhakteshu, to my devotees. So all of you are mama, are Sri Krishna's, Krishnasya bhakta. You are all bhaktas, devoted to Sri Krishna, either as a deity, which is wonderful, or as that inner divinity. This is Sri Krishna's language. We've seen again and again in Bhagavad Gita and in Uddhava Gita, Sri Krishna describes that ultimate reality as his own personal presence within you. So you can be devoted either to Sri Krishna with the common form we have on the altar, or both, and or, not or, and slash or Sri Krishna's divine presence within you. Okay, so he's talking about those who impart this powerful wisdom as taught by Sri Krishna. Tasya, for that person, for that guru who is imparting these teachings, for that guru who is brahmadayasya, who is giving, who is leading you, to give, one who is leading you to discover your true nature, Sri Krishna says, aham dadami, says, I am the one who gives. That sounds a little odd, because first he says the guru gives, then he says, I give. How? He says, aham dadami, I give, not guru. Sri Krishna says, I give. I give what? Atmanam. I give myself, atmana, by myself. Now, that's very cryptic. I give myself by myself. But then what is the guru doing? Just sitting here, I suppose. So, what is Sri Krishna saying here? What the guru is giving is Sri Krishna. The guru is one who has discovered the divinity within and is sharing that discovery with you. And that guru is non-separate from Krishna, from an Advaitic standpoint, from a non-dual standpoint. That guru is a manifestation of Sri Krishna. So the guru, who is non-separate from Krishna, is giving Krishna atmana, by Krishna. What does that mean? How did the guru gain the ability to teach? And before we come to that, how do we gain the ability to do anything? How did you gain the ability to see, to hear, taste, smell, touch, to think, to feel emotions, to walk around, to do everything. All of our faculties, all of our powers, in simple American English, we say God-given. Whatever capacities we have are God-given. Without such blessings, what could we do? I mean, every living being is blessed differently. An amoeba, the smallest living thing, an amoeba is blessed in certain. An amoeba is blessed with enough intelligence to go away from acid and go towards something sweet. So even an amoeba knows to go for food and to get away from anything threatening. It's a blessing. Even amoebas are blessed. How about you and me? How many times more than amoeba are we blessed? Now, in context here, we're talking about not an amoeba, not you, but the guru. So the guru is further blessed with the ability to impart these teachings. The guru is blessed in many ways by the parampara, by the lineage of teachers through which these teachings have come. Not just the teachings, but even the method of teaching, the language, the style. All of that has been conveyed, and the traditional prakriyas, traditional methodologies. But more than that, and much more than that, the ability to teach. The ability for the guru to have discovered the truth within. By the way, you can... This is so basic. Can you teach what you don't know? If you don't know anything about computers, can you teach someone how to use a computer? Okay. Consider the guru's position. The guru is teaching you about absolute truth, Sri Krishna's presence within you. Can the guru teach if he or she has not himself or herself personally discovered? So the guru teaches what he or she knows and teaches using the faculties which are a blessing of Ishvara. This, to me, this really points to a particular, I guess it's like a perspective on guru. You know, in our tradition, there's so much reverence for guru, and sadly, that often is misdirected. You know, I have to introduce this point with a funny story. A few of you have heard this. When I was first initiated as a sannyasi, it was 1993. I come out of the Ganga, so Puja Swamiji took us. There were 2 days of rituals, then finally we went down to the river, took a bath, threw away our clothes, we came out, and there's more teaching that goes on. We're given this clothes to wear, this cloth to wear. And then finally we walk back up the ghat. There are some steps going down to the river, back up into his ashram. Some of you have been there. It's a lovely place in Rishikesh, right on the banks of the Ganga. So we walk up these steps to the ashram grounds, and there are a bunch of people there waiting. It's kind of a big deal. So, and Shivaratri, everyone comes to the ashram, and then Diksha takes place. Sannyasa Diksha initiation often takes place on that day. So a lot of people are gathered to witness all of these ceremonies and to greet the newly minted sannyasis. So imagine me as a youngish, newly minted sannyasi, walking up these steps, walking into the ashram, and then suddenly someone goes to touch my feet. I jumped. I didn't literally jump, but I did step back. I'm not used to that, right? But a good friend took me aside. Here's a brahmachari, close friend. Took me aside and explained to me, you can't do that. If someone goes to touch your feet, you can't step back. I said, but I'm not comfortable with it. And he said, who cares? Maybe not those exact words. I don't know. He was a very traditional young brahmachari from Andhra Pradesh. I still remember him well. Anyway, he told me, it's not about you. That person is touching your feet to receive Ishvara's blessings, not yours. And I'm not sure if he said this or where I got this. I think he said that it's because of the vesha, the dress. When you're wearing this dress, it's just like, how about this? If you see a statue of Krishna in Walmart, they could have, I don't know, maybe they have. They have a decorations department, I suppose. So in this decoration apartment in Walmart, you see this little figure of Krishna. Do you take his blessings in Walmart? Not likely. But when you see that same representation on an altar, you do. It's context. In the same way, when you see a person in ordinary clothes, it's one context. And when you see someone dressed in these clothes, it's a different context. Based on that, I figured out a new way to understand people touching my feet. I am a clothes hanger. Get it? Because it's not me, it's because of the dress. What is my role? My role is to be a good clothes hanger so that these clothes are present for them. They have that feeling of respect. This is the idea. The point in this verse that I'm leading up to is this. It's the person that we revere as guru, and you know, that's normal. We revere people, we respect not just gurus, but other people we respect, we revere. But let us not forget what's important is not the person, but what's inside the person, the teachings. So from this perspective, there's another way of looking at guru. Instead of clothes hanger, I use another metaphor, a can, like a can of beans. If you go to the market and get a can of beans, what's more valuable, the can or what's inside? Right? So that's another metaphor. The guru is a container, not for beans. Guru is the container for these wonderful teachings. And that's what Sri Krishna is saying here. That guru... By the way, this is not to demean the value of a guru. How would you get beans without a container? A container is absolutely necessary, but it's not the main thing. A guru is is absolutely necessary, but not the main thing. Excuse me. Okay, where are we? Here we are. Okay, that's enough.
Yahe tat samadhita, yahe tat samadhita, pavitram paramam shuchi, pavitram. Sapuye ta hara hara. Sapuye dahar ahar ahar ahar. Okay. Aharam jnana deepena darshayan. Jnana deepena darshayan. Yaha, one who etat samadhita. One who reads, one who studies, etat, this. Referring specifically to the teachings of Sri Krishna found in the Uddhava Gita, that portion of the 10th book, I think, of the Bhagavata Purana. These teachings, which are pavitram and shuchi, pavitram, purifying, shuchi, pure, How much? Paramam. Supremely pure and purifying. Supremely means what? You wash your hands to get all the bugs off. Suppose after washing your hands thoroughly, then our microbiologist is here. So here's the metaphor. This is a new metaphor to use. So you wash your hands, and then Vasanti comes and takes a swab from your hand, and she puts it in one of these Petri dishes with that agar, is that what it's called? That substance on the bottom, and she wipes it there, she puts it in a warm place, and 3 days later, you see that the bugs in your hand, which were microscopic, have multiplied. And now they're all over this Petri dish. So you thought your hands were clean. Think about that when you're having lunch. So then, Swamiji said, even washing my hands are not, so wash them again. Every time you wash your hands, you get rid of 90% of the bugs, which means there are 10% left. So you wash your hands again, you get rid of 90% of the 10%, which means you've gotten rid of 99%. Then you wash your hands again, you've gotten rid of 99.9%, because every time you get rid of 90% of the bugs. When will your hands be perfectly clean? There's no perfection in that kind of process, ever. And that's showing the limitations of what we can accomplish through our worldly activities. They're all limited in that same way. We call this the relative or empirical world. There's nothing absolute about it. And here's the problem. We live in this relative absolute world and we want contentment and peace. But tell me, do you want relative contentment? Do you want to be content 90% of the time? 99% of the time? 99.9, which sounds really good, but suppose today happens to be one of the 0.1% of the days that you're miserable. Is that okay? And what I'm leading up to is a very profound observation, and that is we live in a relative world and we have an expectation for perfect peace and contentment. Do you see the problem? Is a state of perfection accessible through worldly activities? You get the point. So the worldly act of washing your hands can make your hands increasingly clean. All of our efforts in life can make our lives increasingly pleasant. When will you arrive at a state of perfect peace and contentment? The answer is when you've removed the last bacterium from your hands. When will we remove the last one? According to this, you remember in a math class you saw these curves? Which hadn't, they call it asymptote, they approach zero but never reach it. That's the mathematics to describe cleaning your hands. That's the mathematics to describe gaining perfect peace and contentment in life. You approach it, you never ever get it. So then how can we gain a state of perfection? Sri Krishna here is talking about jnanam, spiritual wisdom. And what's so unique about knowledge, spiritual wisdom, is that spiritual wisdom can be perfect. In fact, knowledge can be perfect. Tell me, your knowledge that 2 plus 2 equals 4, we used that before, 2 plus 2 is 4, is your knowledge mostly correct? partially correct, or is it perfectly correct? 2 plus 2 indeed equals 4. There's no shortcoming. There's nothing wrong. There's no incompleteness in that truth. In the same way, there's no incompleteness when you finally gain this spiritual wisdom, this discovery of your true nature as Satchitananda Atma. That knowledge can be perfect. Our bodies will never be perfect. Our minds will certainly never be perfect. What can be perfect is your knowledge of your true nature, your recognition of your true nature. That can indeed be perfect. Therefore, this teaching is paramam pavitram, the most purifying. What's being removed is ignorance. And what is removed is not 90% of your ignorance or 99% of your ignorance or 99.9% of your ignorance. In 2 plus 2 is 4, is there a little bit of ignorance left? None. In the same way, with the discovery of your true nature, that impurity called ignorance has been completely removed. And saha, in the third line, saha puyeta, a person gets purified and purified of this ignorance. That's the context. A person gets purified of this ignorance. How? Ahar, aharam. Right? Ahar, ahar, yeah. Ahar, ahar. Yeah, here we go. Ahar, ahar, followed by mam. That's the text here. Ahar, ahar, day by day. We're talking about the layers? So day by day you get purified. Day by day, or gradually, you gain this wisdom, layer by layer by layer. You gain this knowledge about what? Mom. You gain this knowledge about me, Sri Krishna says. And he says, me, you gain this knowledge how? Jnana deepena darshayan. Darshayan, seeing. Being shown. Being shown this inner truth, being shown by the guru, or seeing with the help of the guru, jnana deepena, by the deepa, the light, the flame of jnana, knowledge. So this flame of knowledge, when you go into a dark room with a flashlight or torch, as many of you would say, you go into that room and that torch metaphorically removes the darkness, revealing whatever is present. Here, this jnana deepa, this light, this flame of knowledge removes the ignorance within, that so-called veil of ignorance covering the inner truth, revealing what? Revealing Sri Krishna's already existent presence within. Okay, we'll see. One more verse. This verse is focused on jnanam, obviously. The last verse we'll see today, Sri Krishna switches as he does. He loves to do that, especially in the Uddhava Gita. He flips between jnana and bhakti. Jnana, bhakti, jnana, bhakti. He puts them together. And much more so in this Uddhava Gita than in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, bhakti is absolutely present in a powerful way, but bhakti gets an extra promotion, as it were, here in this Uddhava Gita. Let's see this one more verse. Yeah, there it is.
Yahe tachadhaya nityam, yahe tachadhaya nityam avyagra.
There's a typo here.
Shrinu. Avyagra shrunuyan naraha, avyagra shrunuyan naraha, mayi bhaktim param kurvan, mayi bhaktim param kurvan, karma bhir nasabhadhyate, karma bhir nasabhadhyate.
yaha, and it has to be connected, end of the second line, naraha, person. Yaha, naraha, a person who shunuyat, who listens. Talking about you. A person who listens to this teaching. So Sri Krishna is teaching Uddhava. I like this kind of imagery. So if Sri Krishna is teaching Uddhava, all of us are like looking over Uddhava's shoulder, standing nearby with our ears leaned towards Sri Krishna because we too want to hear. That's figuratively what we're doing right now. We are looking over Uddhava's shoulder to hear what Sri Krishna is teaching to Uddhava. So Sri Krishna is talking about all of you. Yaha naraha, a person, shunuyat, who's listening, a person like you, listening how? Three words here will give you some advice about how you should listen. How should you listen? Shraddhaya, with shraddha. And we commonly translate shraddha as faith, and we could spend an hour talking about the various meanings of shraddha, but faith here doesn't mean blind faith. Faith here, my guru liked the expression, trust pending verification. How's that for a definition? Trust pending verification. That's his. Pujya Swami Dayananda defined Shraddha with these three words. Trust pending verification. Blind, I'll be very honest with you, blind faith doesn't work. And when it comes to the teachings of Vedanta, blind faith, sadly, can actually be an obstacle. Because you get it, tattvamasi, okay, I get it. I get it means what? I believe it. And you settle for belief. And by settling for belief, you deprive yourself of going much further on this journey of spiritual growth, atma-vichara, self-inquiry. So generally, faith in general is a wonderful, wonderful blessing, but blind faith, when it comes to the teachings of the ancient rishis, blind faith doesn't help and can even be an impediment. So what are the requirements you should have then as you're listening? Shraddha, defined not merely as faith, but trust pending verification. You should also listen how? Nityam, continually, which is why we have this class every Saturday. So you keep coming again and again, and that's necessary. We said layer after layer after layer. And finally, his last bit of advice here, you should be avyagraha. Vyagra means distracted. I don't know how teachers can, professors in a college. Decades ago, I was invited to a university to address some students of philosophy. So this was an undergraduate course in philosophy, and the professor introduces the Swami, who's going to teach you something about the philosophy of Advaita Vedanta. So I walk into this lecture hall and I'm teaching, and the students, undergraduates, right? I wasn't used to that. I say, why aren't they paying attention to me? But then I figured it out. What was I like as a teenager? I was worse. But I was listening. This is how teenagers listen. They are listening to you. They just don't look like it. You've noticed that if you're having a heavy talk with a teenager, they won't look you in the face, right? that's the way they are, okay. But they're hearing. So here Sri Krishna says, avyagraha, you should not be distracted. You should be concentrated and intent. And in this way, such a person, mayi param bhaktim kurvan. Param bhaktim, the highest bhakti. The highest bhakti is not devotion to Sri Krishna on the altar. That's bhakti, all right. It's not the highest bhakti. If devotion to Sri Krishna's presence on the altar is not the highest, what is the highest? You get it, right? Worship of Sri Krishna's presence within you. Param bhaktim. That is the highest bhakti, kurvan, highest bhakti, mayi, unto me. That person, kurvan, gaining the highest bhakti unto me. What about that person? Saha, in the last line, that person, saha, na badhyate, is not bound, karma bihi, by karma. That person is liberated. That person gains moksha. That person is a mukta purusha, a liberated person. Why? Gaining this highest bhakti. And just we'll just end with an observation here about these last two verses. So prior verse, he's talking about the knowledge which is capable of removing that veil of ignorance and revealing Sri Krishna's presence within. He says that knowledge is supremely purifying, that knowledge which makes you discover your true nature, jnanam. Notice how different this verse is. Prior verse talked about jnanam, and he talked about paramam pavitram, the most purifying knowledge. And in this verse, he's talking about param bhaktim, supreme devotion. And if you ask, you won't ask this because you've been understanding these classes, but if somebody were to ask, well, wait a minute, is Sri Krishna saying jnanam is the highest, or is Sri Krishna saying bhakti is the highest? And in the Uddhava Gita, the answer to that question is yes. Knowledge is the highest. Bhakti is the highest because, listen carefully, parabhakti is knowledge. Parabhakti is jnanam. Let me explain that. Parabhakti is devotion not to the deity on the altar, but to Sri Krishna's presence within. How can you be devoted to something within that you've not discovered? If you stand at the altar with your eyes closed, you're kind of missing the point, right? You have to stand at the altar with your eyes open. So here, just because Sri Krishna is within, you have to, like, metaphorically open your eyes. You have to make that discovery. That discovery is a result of knowledge. So opening your eyes metaphorically and discovering Sri Krishna's presence within you is identical to parabhakti. They are the same. It's the same truth, the same reality, the same enlightenment. But let's just be clear, on the knowledge side and on the bhakti side. On the knowledge side, you don't gain that discovery by collecting Vedantic teachings, by gaining more information. And on the bhakti side, you don't gain that merely by worship of God on an altar. Because worshiping God on an altar, your attention is still focused outside. To gain bhakti, fine. Your attention can be focused outside. But to gain para bhakti, the highest bhakti, your attention must be turned within. All right, that's a good place to end today. There are just a few verses left. We conclude this class, this text, in the next class. I'll also announce what will be our next study. I'll announce it at that time. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Vedanta class, Shankara's Upadesha Sahasri, at 10 o'clock. We have Satsanga question-answer at 11. And I'll remind you, this coming Wednesday, we have our monthly advanced meditation session, Wednesday at 7 p.m., advanced meditation. If you are a regular meditator, come and join us, and we'll conclude with our prayers.
Om Gananaham Tva Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavingavinam Hupamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrinvan Uttabhasira Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramhanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti, 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 om tat sat.